Most colleges today ask you to leave your faith at the front door. But at Northwest University in Kirkland, their door is wide open. Listen as NU's Provost, Dr. Sarah Drivdahl, describes how their approach to academics encompasses the whole person.
Christian, higher education has many different purposes, but I would say the most important thing that a university can do is to help students find their call and serve Christ to their fullest potential. And that is something that Northwest Universities and the Ivy League are doing, that we are so good at helping students figure out who they are, learn the information they need, become the people they need to be to really advance the kingdom of God. And when I'm in a classroom at Northwest University, we get to talk about not just this topic, but we get to talk about how Christ relates to that topic. We get to teach the whole person.
NU's application deadline for fall classes has been extended to June 1st. A Christ-centered college experience is still possible, and generous scholarships are still available. Apply today at northwestu.edu.
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Are you kidding me?
Hail to the chief.
Don't you ever talk about me.
I refuse to follow those rules.
This is the Brian Suits Show.
AM 770 KTTH and a silver alert coming out of Eastern WA over the weekend. It's a silver Toyota Corolla of recent manufacture that we're looking for. And the fear is that the father, who is a chap, could be taking the one-year-old to Mexico, where inevitably they will have that information at the border. And the Mexicans, actually, because they're not real big on having problems, they will check on the way in. So it's a system that works. It's worked in the past. Do we need a reset at America's universities? We'll talk to a Fox News analyst on this here in a couple minutes. And look at that. The font was big enough so I can read it. And the Columbia University president has said, "I'm deeply saddened by what is happening on our campus. Our bonds as a community have been severely tested in ways that will take a great deal of time and effort to reaffirm." And so she announced that the classes were virtual. And I mean, is that what you're paying $17,000 a year for? I guess students at Columbia University were told in an overnight statement that all classes will be held virtually yesterday and today. Dr. Nimat Minouche Shafiq said in a statement, and we'll talk to a Fox News guy at 7:30 about the great collegiate reset, and if anyone cares. The Supreme Court hearing the Grants Pass case, there's two big cases that the Ninth Circuit has dealt with, have been the Boise versus Poverty, Boise versus the homeless, and Grants Pass. Grants Pass was sued by some hippie legal outreach group because they passed a civic ordinance to make you pooping on their sidewalk and then going back in your tent so you can do your Fenty. They made that illegal.
These hippie weirdos.
Big time. And so anyway, that's what this case is about. And so evidently, there was some Sotomayor pushback from the normally reliably liberal six that are on there. So anyway, happy Tuesday, 195 days until the election. And I get the feeling that the coverage that you got yesterday of the Trump falsifying records case is by people that are fans of all the rigmarole, because it was all about the motorcade and the whole thing. It's as if you asked me, like if you sit down at an adult libationary with me and say, "So what was this OSS? What this Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare? What's that a history of?" I would be so excited. I would bore you till your earlobes fell off. And the Trump thing, you know, and keep in mind, it's about falsifying business records. And Trump Trump very successfully has been, and even MSNBC took him live. I was blown away because they hate him, except that they love ratings. They all do because the ratings are what drive sales, oddly enough. And MSNBC will never employ a conservative who will explain Trump, but they will let Trump talk live on their TV and people leave the TV on Trump. And yes, they will make money off Trump. They have no problem profiting from Trump, but they you won't get a show on MSNBC if you don't absolutely hate him.
To a modest fine, to a short stint in jail. But Trump did.
So they're talking about contempt because they're saying that he violated the gag order, and the gag order it says in it that it could be a $1,000 a day violation or even time in jail. And I'll ask you, producer Greg, be objective. I think for Trump right now, because honestly, the granular detail about, you know, the falsifying accounting records and all that, at the end of the day, it's really boring. And what they're finding out is that people are not tuning in because there's no live camera in the courtroom. And so it's one talking head to another. Don't you think? And also, by the way, Trump donations are drying up. If you want to do something with your, if you find $1,000 and you're going to give it to a campaign and you want to do the most damage to Biden right now, give that money to RFK Jr. He's a lunatic. But they're terrified of him, and they're having to spend money because he is doing well with donations. He's not going to win, but Biden is having to pay attention to the guy. So to be disruptive, you don't give it to Trump, you give it to RFK Jr., knowing full well you're throwing it away. But that being said, I think the best thing Trump could do is continue to talk about the judge, the jury, the whole thing, and violate the gag order and go to jail.
Of all the felony charges Trump is facing right now in various states, this case in particular in New York looks like it's the most nakedly politically motivated. There's no doubt.
It really does. And Trump is calling out the case, the jury, the judge, and he's saying, look, the feds looked at this, they walked away because, and his defense attorney said yesterday, look, affecting an election outcome, that's what all campaigns are. It's called democracy. And, like, he said that to the jury, and the jury was nodding, going, eh, has a point.
Not appear to be too concerned about that yesterday. He went on a rant to reporters about the credibility of Michael Cohen, and then he later spoke on a radio show making false claims about the jury.
That jury was picked so fast, 95% Democrats. The area is mostly all Democrat. You think of it as just a purely Democrat area. It's a very unfair situation.
And like I say, the judge can say you badmouth the jury, the case, and that you have a gag order. That's a violation of the gag order. And he can put an ex-president in jail for 30 days. That's an option. And I would say right now, because all the coverage of the case is that it's you know, practically the Kennedy assassination or something. And really what it boils down to is the guy has affairs on his wife. You're all fine with that. He had an affair with a porn star who clearly thought there was something in it for her. Because when it was time for her to go, when there was something in it for her, this guy that had an affair with her, running for president, they had to pay her to shut her up. Worst money ever spent, but how do they do it? And while it's, you know, it was pointed out, it's literally not illegal to pay someone money to shut up. If you're doing it for influence, it's a different deal. It's illegal to accept a bribe. And it's illegal for you to go overseas in a country where people are bribed left and right. And as an American, you can't offer a bribe. Why we do that, I don't know. It's really naive. But anyway, so they shielded a legal expense by reimbursing Cohen, the droopy dog guy, for personally being a conduit for the money to the porn star who ironically, would not shut her mouth at that point. And so, so because the prosecutor in Manhattan, Alvin Bragg, he literally ran saying, I'm going to get Trump. So how can you not make this look astoundingly political? You can't. You just can't. And ultimately, it's the weakest of the cases. And the whole, and they're, what they're afraid of, the dilemma they're in now, is that this jury has grown up with Donald Trump in their news cycle in New York. This case sounds like total crap. It doesn't sound very New York. And if this one doesn't, if it ends in a not guilty, even a mistrial, it affects the other juries. But this one right now, because of the glee of the motorcade, that was the thing that was playing in the morning montage, was the detailed, you know, taking a left, taking a right, now finding parking at the intersection of human history, just bizarre. And so my view of the coverage of it yesterday was that I was pretty underwhelmed, but that was the one thing I was struck by. Because if you're Trump, you're saying, how do I make money off this? Because he has a great point. Because the one thing about a campaign is you can make money, you can lose money, but you cannot make time. And right now, as he said, he should be campaigning in Georgia, and he's not. And he's burning money. And he's going to go to Florida.
But Jews are not allowed in Israel.
Wait, where did I put that? All right, here it is.
And on the way back, took the freshman class at SMU hostage and hid them under.
The Trump motorcade, the breathless Trump motorcade coverage was the thing that got me yesterday. And Jon Stewart made fun of it on Comedy Central. But it's a motorcade. Then he gets out of the motorcade, and like people do, and then he goes into the courthouse, and it's all very boring. But let's just know it all right now.
I want it all, and I want it now.
Know it all. First thing.
First thing. People think they have a First Amendment, so they can block your First Amendment. It's called a heckler's veto. And we'll talk with a Fox News expert on the subject in the Ivy Leagues as Columbia University goes to a online teaching today. No more going out there thinking that you paid $32,000, whatever the heck it is, and that you should be sitting in a classroom because if an Israeli professor can't get on the campus, then you're sure not. You and your 32,000
Night protests now spreading to campuses across the U.S. ABC's Stephanie Ramos at Columbia Tonight.
Tonight, college campuses scrambling to handle a growing pro-Palestinian protest movement. Columbia University stepping up campus security and moving classes online. The school's president saying we need a reset to de-escalate the rancor. But today, fresh arrests and tensions boiling over on the first night of Passover. This Israeli assistant professor confronting university officials over being denied access to the main lawn as school officials try to separate protesters.
I am a professor here. I have every right to be everywhere on campus. You cannot let people that support Hamas on campus and me, a professor, not go on campus. Let me in now.
I mean, he has a point, but he does sound pretty puffy. I am a professor. I'm tenured here and stuff. But so anyway, we'll talk at 7:30 to our guy from Fox News about that.
Brian, let's make no mistake about why these students are protesting the war in Gaza.
Because of genocide.
It's because it's Jews who are prosecuting the war. There's no shortage of human tragedies that are going on around the world, whether that's the persecution of Uyghurs in China. The war in Myanmar has resulted in the death of tens of thousands of people the last 2 years. I think it's up to at least 60,000. There's a war in Ukraine that continues to rage on.
And where were these people when Bashar Assad was murdering 900,000 Sunnis?
Hundreds of thousands.
With Putin's blessing on that to create a diaspora of Arab refugees in Europe. they were nowhere. When an Arab kills an Arab population, they're not there. So, I mean,
the death toll in
we're running out of conclusions.
Congo, the last 20 years, is in the millions killed. Okay, and then you have this free democracy in the Middle East, this little country called Israel with about 7 million people that is thriving, flourishing because they have freedom and free elections, and they're surrounded by these nations that all vow to their extinction, and yet the college campuses get in a tizzy when this country reacts to a brutal slaughter of their people on October 7th. It's because they're Jews. It's anti-Semitic. It's pro-terrorist nonsense crap and drivel.
And the author and professor of economics, Scott Galloway, said something this morning that I loved. Because for the first time, people are even bringing up, you know, Syria and all that. And for all of you, Bashar al-Assad, intentionally, if you want to talk genocide, it's not just slaughtering a population, but it's moving a population. And Putin said, you know what I found? Whether it's the Serbs or my guys in Chechnya, if you kill a few, you terrorize millions and they'll want to leave. If you let them leave, they'll leave. They'll walk through Turkey and they will go to Europe and destabilize Europe, which they did. They re-energized the European far right, especially in Germany. And Bashar Assad is a doctor. He's an MD. He's a doctor of ophthalmology. He lived in San Francisco for years, but he is a cold snake. He's a gecko. And he did that knowing full well that the world stopped caring about genocide, like circa 1965 or something. So, yeah, just ask yourself, what would we have done if October 7th happened in America?
If Mexico had elected a jihadist cartel to run their country and then they incurred into Texas and on a per capita basis killed 35,000 people of the population of the University of Texas and on the way back took the freshman class at SMU hostage and hid them under tunnels, what would we do? It'd be the great Sonora radioactive parking lot. But Jews are not allowed and Israel is not allowed to prosecute a war. And they are
Damn right. Damn right. And so, by the way, the commander-in-chief of the Israeli military intelligence, the IDF military intelligence, is the latest sacrificial lamb to go under the suffer bus of the Democratic Party, because they're so afraid of these youngsters that they're putting all the pressure on Israel to make things better. So he was told that he needs to spend more time with his family. This is why the people on the far left, far blue, they want resignations, firings. They want something. And they're saying, well, you guys should have known you were paying Hamas and you had their plans. At most, the Israeli intelligence had a aspirational plan of vulnerabilities that Hamas, as if they're being run competently, they're looking for vulnerabilities in their enemy, any and all Jews, including one-year-olds. And they found one and they exploited it. It was that obvious on October 8th when I was on the air on that Monday and said, well, it was the end of a very large Jewish holiday. And they knew that 70% of the Israeli bases were on leave back home. And so they took advantage of that. I'm really kind of surprised they didn't see the vulnerability there, because the parallel with the October 1973 war's vulnerabilities was inescapable. But anyway, that's are we still on thing one?
Yeah, we can go to thing two.
Thing two.
Second thing.
Boeing releases its quarter one earnings tomorrow, Wednesday, before the opening bell. So that'll be interesting. So far, what we're seeing is Spirit Airlines with lower earnings. Airlines that fly Boeing 737 fuselage aircraft are not doing well. Guess who they're going to blame? Well, so the whistleblower, Salapur, if you missed this, he was talking about all of you with your Tarzan airplane
making. Helping you make a name for yourself with our good name behind you.
Nothing but the truth. So help you God.
I inspected airplane data. I found gaps exceeding the specification that were not properly addressed 98.7% of the time.
So he was a 787 quality control guy, an engineer. And when he spoke up, he says he was retaliated against. And that's a different issue than air safety.
I was ignored. I was told not to create delays. I was told, frankly, to shut up. At one point, Boeing management got sick of me and raising these issues and moved me out of the 787 program into the 777 program. On the 777 program, I found problems. Again, I literally saw people jumping on the pieces of the airplane to get them to align. I call it the Tarzan effect.
I'm not defending jumping up and down on a 777 wing. I'm just saying sometimes some elbow grease is required. So anyway, this it may not be a good quarter for Boeing on earnings. So there is a backlog of 737s, as you all know, in Everett. So that's good. Airlines have to pay quite a premium. There's quite a fine in backing out. But the deal is, smelling blood in the water, you know what Airbus is doing? They're making their aircraft, they're hiring, and they're lowering their prices. And then the Chinese, who Boeing spent the 90s doing technology transfer with, are unveiling a new commercial mid-range twin-engine commercial aircraft. Isn't that weird? And they will work with you on that. So it may be a bloodbath tomorrow at Boeing's stock price. We don't know. Thing three.
Third thing.
Well, Sonia Sotomayor, she is a Supreme Court justice. Hello and happy Tuesday. Well, at the Supreme Court today, the Sotomayor showed up like the new Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And she's the first Hispanic court justice on the court, and a lady you don't want to mess with, as the lawyer for Grants Pass found out, because that's the thing. It was a city of Grants Pass versus Gloria Johnson. It was a city ordinance, and the Grants Pass city attorney has to argue it. The much hyped case may turn out to be a big nothing. And how Sonia Sotomayor led the court's liberal alliance arguing that conclusion. So what it's not is a panacea, by the way. If you read any news or even secretly get your worldview from TikTok, you're already sick of hearing about Grants Pass and how the outcome of this case will forever determine how we deal with homelessness. It may or it may not. So here's what happened. Grants Pass passed a law against public sleeping, in particular snoozing with a blanket. The Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit stayed the law, which is overall, by the way, kind of conservative. They stayed the law, saying it was cruel and unusual. It was a violation of the Eighth Amendment. And it was basically making it illegal to be homeless. Local government leaders and politicians in Southern Oregon have since been in a tizzy that Grants Pass ties our hands. Because the Boise decision is the one that says you can't force them off sidewalks unless they have a place to go. Grants Pass doesn't quite do that. I don't know when they passed this ordinance. I guess in the last 10 years or something. Besides the speed limit, have you spent a lot of time in Grants Pass, Producer Greg?
Not recently,
It's
no.
A great town.
I've heard good things.
Ever gone to the Ashland Shakespeare Festival?
No.
You're not going to find a hotel. You have to stay in Grants Pass. But it's a nice, arid, warm town in the summer. Beautiful softball complex where you get in a sleeping bag and you fall asleep. So, and it's kind of weird to me how they, I don't know how they're enforcing it, but that decision will be out in June. Will it affect us in Seattle? Well, here's the thing. The requisite laws to get people from pooping on Third Avenue and Pike or shooting up fentanyl between their toes, those are already on the books, and they've gone through the maze. They're fine. We don't need an outcome out of Grants Pass to stop someone from sleeping on East Lake Avenue East or in a foyer of a certain radio station that I could mention, but I won't because I'm being really subtle and stuff. But how do we settle a problem like America's elite universities? We'll talk with our guy from Fox News, Andy Bleuer, here in just a minute. And is it really a problem? I mean, I'm pretty laissez-faire about this. If your parents want to continue paying for that crap or signing for those loans, let them do it. Maybe they went there. Sucks to be them. Oh, well. But free Palestine or whatever, right? Back in the second, AM 770 KTTH.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Somebody KTTH, Brian Suits here. Good morning, everybody. While you're seeing your screens filled with eggheads, with wealthy eggheads, some would say entitled eggheads at Ivy League universities, making a Gaza problem a U problem or a TV problem. In the case of one Israeli visiting professor at Columbia University, he was barred. Though he has a card key, they wouldn't let him in.
I am a professor here. I have every right to be everywhere on campus. You cannot let people.
That's how you know he's a professor, because he's declaring that he is a professor here. And but that's how my college worked. The teachers were in charge, and the people who pay tuition were paying to sit there and listen to them.
I am a professor here. I have every right to be everywhere on campus. You cannot let people that support Hamas on campus.
Oh, he went there. He brought Hamas. He brought the terrorists that brought the war upon themselves into it. So in response, the president of Columbia University, President Nimat Manush Shafiq, said in a statement posted early Monday, she was deeply saddened on the campus and have riled students and faculty with anti-Jewish slogans and chants. She says, I am deeply saddened by what is happening on our campus. Our bonds as a community have been severely tested in ways that will take a great deal of time. An effort to reaffirm, I'd throw in a dash of self-importance there. Isaac Willauer is from Young Voices, an expert on this stuff. And hey, can I ask you, are you an alumnus from an Ivy League university?
No, absolutely not.
Good for you.
Honestly, right now, I feel like I probably got the better end of that deal. Yeah, no, it's bad. I mean, this statement from Shafiq is pretty wild, because it's interesting. She's deeply saddened by the prominence of pro-Hamas elements on Columbia's campus. I need you to be more than deeply saddened, right? Like, I feel like sad is fine, but this university's seriousness and its legitimacy as an institution are being threatened by the most ridiculous kind of activism, to the point where protesters are encamped on the premises and creating an environment that's so intimidating that Jewish students and faculty are not coming to campus anymore because they no longer believe the campus can ensure their safety. I mean, this is a bit more than sad. I feel like we passed sad, well, in the case of the Israel-Hamas situation, we passed sad quite a while ago. We're quite a few degrees beyond that.
And this cost, the Harvard professor was the one who, when asked, is it wrong to kill babies, or whatever it was, and she said it depends on the context. That cost her job.
Our calls for genocide, anti-Semitic, it depends on the context. It does not, in fact, depend on the context. Yeah, I mean, this is the... we're watching the devolution of the Ivy Leagues in real time, and I'm going to sit here and pretend that I'm really sad about that, really broken up about it. I don't care. It's fine. If this is how they're going to comport themselves, they deserve to be shuttered and die. Yeah, I think at this point, you're looking at institutional futures, right? Because if you're looking at this, you're watching this go down at Columbia. You're watching people get pulled off the quad at Yale for trespassing as part of pro-Hamas protests. Are you even thinking for a minute? Are you thinking for a minute about sending your kid there? And the answer is, for a lot of people, no.
Hell no.
Especially Christian conservatives, certainly Jewish.
And also, it was funny because like one of the first shots across the bow was a op-ed in the Wall Street Journal where I forget what the company was, but they said that they are using their sources to account for some of the student leaders that are calling for genocide against the Jews and do not darken our doorstep with your resume. Basically, they said, if you're one of these people, we don't want your application, your CV, none of that. And that's speaking the language that they understand. Certainly their parents understand.
That seems fair to me. I mean, like, again, I'm 22. Like, it turns out that the path to being a standout member of Generation Z is don't protest in support of a terrorist organization, which I feel like is a fairly low bar to clear. And even then, that bar is still striking some people in the face. But I want to talk about this. So these college age protesters, right? Like I'm 22. I want to talk about this because I think there's a perception that the vast majority of these people are truly anti-Semitic. And I think there's maybe a point of discussion here, right? I don't think that most college students chanting pro-Hamas slogans have the slightest idea what they're referring to when they chant about the river, the sea, or the Jews, right? That most people who are 23, 22, 21, about this age, they're mad because an Instagram post or a TikTok video told them to be mad about it, that told them that supporting Hamas was synonymous with being a good person, that calling for divestment from Israel is an effective and serious way to virtue signal. They're wrong, right? They're nothing can make them right. And some of them actually do mean it. Some of them are legitimately anti-Semitic. And yeah, let's hope they never get hired anywhere. But there's an old saying, right? You never attribute to malice what you can to stupidity. I think we can attribute a lot to stupidity, right? And there's a bit of malice thrown in for good measure, just enough to be concerning. But again, the pretense of this whole discussion is that we're having to have the discussion over, is it malice or stupidity that is calling the shots at an Ivy League university? That is a testament to how far this has fallen.
And then Isaac Willauer from Young Voices joins us. And then the other thing is, when MSNBC was bleeding, but we're not anti-Semitic, we're just anti-Netanyahu. Okay, well, it's sort of given the lie when you see video of people being targeted because they're wearing a Star of David or a man with a kippah on their head.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Or in the case of a British London cop called a man openly Jewish and wouldn't let him counter-protest.
Absolutely. I mean, This whole line of only being anti-Netanyahu. Listen, I have some thoughts about Netanyahu. I have plenty of criticisms of Netanyahu, as do many Israelis, by the way, right? But it's not when you're marching on the street chanting Hamas make us proud, when you are telling Jewish students that you want to repeat October 7th 10,000 times, these are not anti-Netanyahu lines of questioning. These are anti-Jew lines of questioning. These are anti-human levels of lines of questioning. It's not anti-Netanyahu. You can't pretend that. I think that has become, it's just a convenient excuse.
Yeah, and so if you're protesting in support of Hamas, you're protesting in support of people who have demonstrably kidnapped women for the purpose of raping them, raped corpses, beheaded human infants, laughed about it, and their videos from their GoPros, cameras, called their mommies, and bragged about how many Jews they killed that day. And that's who you're protesting. That's who you're supporting with Venmo and PayPal. That's who you're skipping class to go support. It's a really bizarre lie.
At some point you have to look at the people you're supporting and you have to ask, are we the bad guys? Right? This is the question. But it's interesting. So this is what progressive activism, I think specifically on the pro-Hamas within the context of the Israel-Palestine debate does, right? I think the pro-Palestine side of this, especially when you mix in the pro-Hamas element, which is not everybody, but is a stunning plurality, their ask is a fundamentally unworkable one, right? Especially given our current geopolitical climate. And the nice thing about being an activist for a cause that is fundamentally difficult to reconcile with reality is that you're no longer bound by reality. So your demands can be as wild as you please. And you can see this in that when you track it over time, right? So right after October 7th, what's the activist line? What's the slogan? Ceasefire now, right? We want an immediate ceasefire. We're going to pass all kinds of resolutions that do jack. We're going to do all that. It was ceasefire now. That was the term in vogue, right? Now, on Columbia's campus, you have people saying the Israeli state is rooted in genocide and shouldn't exist at all, right? That's an exponential growth in the radicalism of the public statements that are being made, right? And the reason you see that is because pro-Columbia, pro-Hamas protesters at Columbia, they're at Columbia. They don't experience reality because the Ivy Leagues no longer mirror reality, if ever they did. And the nice thing about that is activism no longer has to mirror reality. So the activists choose not to. That's how you get to this level of radicalism. It's the kind of activism that is not only useless, but impossible to reconcile with reality. Which, if all you want to do is be an activist as some way to virtue signal or prove that you're somehow a superior person, that's the best kind of activism, because you never have to be accountable to anybody.
Going over there and joining Hamas, I guess.
Because
they're heroes now.
Maybe they'll do that and die.
It is bizarre. I see a parallel with the people that were apologizing for the Soviet Union when Reagan was president when I was in college. Who were minimizing the Cold War and minimizing the fact that Reagan was busy winning it, and how we were shouted down as, you know, some sort of Luddite throwback by you know, saying commies in 1989, and which was, it's still a funny word, and hippies is still, for the record, funny. Anyway, I'm glad I'm not writing a check for what it costs for tuition, even in the history department, especially in Columbia. So Isaac Willauer from Young Voices, thanks for joining us today.
Dude, thanks for being on the program, man. Take care.
All right, anytime. Thanks. When we come back, I got to play Professor Guy.
And me, a professor, not go on campus. Let me in now.
So there. All right, back in a second.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
AM 770 KTTH. I didn't see how Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare did, so I'm going to pull up Hollywood Reporter. I saw it, and then I know people who saw it, but my showing was it was 10 a.m. I mean, I go to early. I don't like people in the theater, so I go to purposely half-filled theaters. But I liked it. My critique of it would be that it's a Guy Ritchie movie, like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch and all that. So it's very stylistic. And so it was lacking backstory, which I think on a movie based in real history, because that's the one thing about the movie. Everything it depicts really happened. And this was Churchill's personal project early in your old WW2.
Looks like it made about $8.9 million domestically, which seems a little low to me. Unlike you, I went...
Sounds like everyone saw matinees.
Yeah, quite possibly. I actually did that yesterday with my daughter and her friend. We went and saw Dune 2, which I don't know if you've caught that one yet. Worth seeing on the big screen.
And have you seen Dune?
Oh, yeah.
The remake? Is it? I thought that was really good.
I thought the first one was excellent. The second one has a bit of an Empire Strikes Back feel in terms of tone and tenor. Performances are excellent. Special effects are incredible.
May the 4th be with you.
Yeah. But yeah, if you're going to go see Dune 2, make sure you do it in the theater. It's one worth going out to the multiplex.
I knew that the first one was good because people who had read the book were saying, oh, it's crap. And I said, oh, it looks good, though. Well, read the original book. Well, the novel is they get to make their own world up.
The one knock
the
on the
has
film
to look good and keep me entertained,
and it looks great. But the one knock on the film is maybe this is an unpopular opinion. I don't think Christopher Walken as the Emperor is really believable to me. And he's got that Christopher Walken unmistakable tone of voice.
He wasn't in the first one.
He wasn't in the first one.
So he's Emperor, what's his name?
I don't even know his name, but it's Christopher Walken. And he's talking very angrily
really?
About what's going
is
on
he,
in the universe.
Then, does he look to the camera and say, Frankenstein never scared me, marsupials do.
Yeah, the director here put a ton more stars in the sequel, and I don't know if it works to the film's benefit ultimately. I like no names in this like film that is set in the year 10,000.
I don't like acting like, with nobodies.
Oh, there's Florence Pugh. I just saw her in Oppenheimer. You know, I was like, I wish they would have gone with a no name.
And then, of course, you get Jason Momoa. Oh, no, a bunch of water. It's going to get me wet as I stretch.
irony when the spice planet. Yeah.
So, you know, if you want a death wish, folks, here it is. It's not immolate yourself before the Trump trial. It's write a scathing review of Taylor Swift's new album. Because I've never heard of a magazine. Some magazine, and I didn't know there were magazines, but a magazine named Paste had to remove the author's name from a review. Ryan Fish, by the way, because he wrote every song on Taylor Swift's Tortured Poets Department album ranked. And his rankings weren't right. And so, of course, Taylor Swift fans made death threats to the guy. Like, would you even change a routine? No, that would be overdoing it.
The new album sucks. I'm just going to say it. It's 31 songs, and they all sound the same.
But it set records, and that's all that counts.
I don't care. It's not good music.
But it sure as hell is.
It's unoriginal. It's boring. It's redundant. Go out and check out Zach Bryan's new album, or I think the guy's name is Noah Kahan. There are people who are making original,
like
inventive,
playing instruments?
Good stuff that are playing
into
their own
microphones?
Instruments. It's unique and inventive and creative. Taylor Swift, it's just very boring
that
stuff.
That makes me want
and
to...
And the lyrics do suck.
Immolate myself.
Don't say that.
Not really.
He has set fire to himself. A man has emblazoned himself. We have a man who is... He has set fire to himself. A man has emblazoned himself.
I want to emblazon myself.
Your shirt is emblazoned with a white polar bear.
Yep, it is. Well, the shirt's emblazoned. Yeah, the sweatshirt. But I'm not emblazoned.
Outside of the courthouse just now, our cameras are turning right now. A man has now lit himself on fire outside of the courthouse in Manhattan, where we are waiting for history to be made. A full jury panel is gone. We are watching a man who is fully emblazoned in the front of the...
And again, remember, people hurt people. So there you go.
I just finished Neil Postman's Amusing Ourselves to Death book, and this proves his point, which is the essence of television is entertainment. Any subject matter, no matter how grotesque or silly, can be made to be entertaining. Even a man setting himself on fire. CNN just proved it right there. Oh, my gosh, it's shocking. What a spectacle. This is amazing.
I got to tell you, this has been a dark 2 years for me, because in helping a couple different Ukrainian units out, and I mean, in context, I guess you have to be Ukrainian to be like this, but they will shoot first-person video and record it of the commercial quadcopters, such as that you buy at Costco, such as, and then they put montages of the final moments of some Russian schlub running away from them. And these are horrific.
Right.
And they put Benny Hill music and all that to it. And but I mean, some of them are, I got to say, really well done. But I mean, it's weird. At the last second, they always look back because the quadcopter gets super loud. And they turn around and get the quadcopter in the head.
Kablooey.
And it's nasty. And I wish I could unsee some of it and the whole thing. But when we come back, bad vibes up at Montlake.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not just Tybo Rogers in the spotlight anymore. Another former University of Washington football player, Diesel Gordon, he is detailed heavily in the police report from the assault that happened just last month. And tonight we have new reaction from the...
More violence being blamed on former Husky football players, at least UW. I got to say, doing the right thing this time, getting right out in front of the issue and suspending these chaps. And this is, I'm assuming that the current King County prosecutor is not a Tyee Club member. I don't know. I'm just norm-mailing it here. But when we come back, the worst headline I've read in a year. New study raising melatonin safety concerns, especially for young people. I don't want to read this story, but I will because I'm strong. I'm a river to my people. And I give and I give and I give. When the giving's all done, I give a little more. And so we'll slice through the spin. Is the Grants Pass case really the panacea that Seattle's been looking at? No. Even liberal Sonia Sotomayor said, look, hey, cities that are complaining about this, there's nothing right now on your own books preventing you from stopping this. So obviously, it's about local will. Okay, so there's that. Back in a second, AM 770 KTTH.
I want more, and I know I shouldn't.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.